This is The Topic is Trek, episode 80, for Friday, December 4th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, the Federation strikes back. Anson Mount keeps his eyes on the skies. We put a new spin on our episode recaps. All that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. Programmable Chatter. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Topic is Trek, because if we were doing the last episode over again, I'm not sure what the point of that would be. But, so I don't confuse myself any further, let me bring in my co-hosts, and they will confuse me instead. So beaming in first to join me with his appropriate new welcoming phrase is... My goodness, that must have been something I ate, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
You have me at hello.
As much as I appreciate that, I think you need to go back and try again.
Okay, fine.
And also beaming in to join me, whether he has a personal transporter or not, I don't know, is Mr. Craig Chuck Tomasi.
This is not the science lab.
Just came in through the door.
Yeah, he just walked in.
Seems mundane.
Linus is really getting low tech.
I wonder how many people are on Discovery using the personal transport just to go through and the next door, you know, so they don't have to, keep waiting for the doors to open.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead.
Jump to the front of the line.
I am 31st century lazy. Yeah.
I don't need a remote for my television.
The line for this movie is long. Hold on a second.
I am the remote for my television.
Hey, there's someone already in this bathroom stall.
Oh, sorry. Oh, there's all sorts of new problems that I envision many, many episodes dealing with some of these problems. But... we have a lot to talk about on the show that is not those problems. It's different problems and different things altogether. So we want to get started right away, if it's okay with Charlie, of course. You know what that means.
That subspace chatter.
No, Charlie, it does not mean we are not going to do subspace chatter. It means we are going to do subspace chatter. We are going to have a talk afterwards. Please wait for me out in the hall.
I just came up with a 2021 prediction about Charlie. I'm going to leave it till we get to our predictions show.
Yes, which is coming up later this year. Big surprise. Will we review our last year's predictions for this year and then make a whole new bunch of things that probably won't come true. But
wait a minute.
Anyway. I think we're going to have another prediction show.
I think it's too late anyway, maybe it's not. Let's start off Subspace Chatter with a story from Chuck.
I was just looking at the calendar. I think our next show might be the prediction show because there aren't many more shows this year.
Time keeps slipping into the future here.
Oh, thanks, Steve Miller.
Slipping. We can't pay for those rights.
Craig, you crossed the line again.
Oh, sorry.
All right, let me get on with my story. Well, we know Star Wars happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and Star Trek takes place in the future, in this galaxy. The two franchises have crossed from time to time. For instance, R2-D2 floats by in a scene from J.J. Abrams' 2009 Star Trek film, and now it's Trek's turn to cross over. In the new book, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, nice title for a Star Trek book, I guess, published to celebrate the 40th anniversary of that film. It's the other franchise doing this.
Yes.
Members of the Ancient Order of the Wills get to write their take on things. Sorry, I was just stumbling over some words there. I'm okay, though.
They're kind of big. I understand.
They are tasked with writing the film's opening crawl, and this exchange takes place when one of the order uses the word Starfleet in a sentence. Wait, Starfleet? Did you say Starfleet? Are Kirk and Spock going to show up next? I don't even know what a Kirk and Spock are. There's a big surprise. Do you know anything? The dialogue is certainly tongue-in-cheek, but it produced a forceful laugh on our part.
Yeah, see what we did there? Forceful laugh. Who writes this stuff?
Oh, I can just see me. Darth Vader force choking somebody and it turns into...
Yeah, we need to fire this writer, by the way.
Yes, yes. I'm worth every penny you guys pay me. All right, but let's move on from a galaxy far, far away to a land down under.
All right. While appearing on the Australian podcast Pod Syndicate, Star Trek Picard actor Evan Evagora has confirmed that filming of the series of the second season will begin in January of next year. This affirms producer Michelle Hurd's October, by the way, in case, depending on when you listen to this, we're talking about January of 2021. So not next. Anyway, so this affirms the producer Michelle Hurd's October statement about the same effect. Evan is anxious to get back to work. He can't wait to, as he puts it, get back to the Motley crew and hang out with everyone in California. So Evan Gora, who portrays Elnor, the young Romulan warrior trained by the Kwajalein Malat, also said that he would love to see Elnor share a sparring session with Worf. Hmm. Sounds good to me. How about you?
Yeah, I'm down for that.
He's getting kind of old in Picard days, though.
That's why he said he wanted to...
I can take on sparring. An old Klingon warrior.
Yeah, get a chance. Sure. Means I have a chance. He's old now.
It's either him or the
can't sixth. Quite lift that batleth. You got me, kid.
It's either that or young Alexander.
Today's a good day to go on a diet. Okay.
Alexander's dead, isn't he? Didn't he die? No.
No, I'm talking about the young Alexander, the one that didn't want to be a warrior and went and hid in his closet. I can take him.
Yeah, but we saw him like 12 times after. Didn't he die eventually?
I haven't got that far. Don't spoil it.
No spoilers, please. No spoilers for shows from the 80s. Okay.
By the way, on Blossom.
Stop it. Stop it now. Or I'll tell you what Clarissa actually said. And then.
Hey, don't spoil the Golden Girls for Craig. Right.
Yeah, I'll just split up. Just one word or two words. Cheesecake. All right. So let's move on. Topic is Trek. The topic is Trek. Got it. All right. Star Trek's latest Captain Christopher Pike, Anson Mount, is joining the real-world search for new lives and new civilizations. What? The scientific organization known as METI, which is Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, announced that Mount has joined their board of directors. He will take an active part in educating the public about the various means of searching for intelligent life beyond our planet. And in particular, METI's dedication to an active search for extraterrestrial life. Now, a little bit of background here. Founded in 2015, METI's goal is to expand on the efforts of other SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, organizations by sending powerful intentional signals to nearby stars in the hope of prompting a reply. The idea being that some extraterrestrial civilizations may only be listening for signals of other life rather than broadcasting themselves. They just like to listen in on the conversations. They really have nothing to say.
Lurkers.
Yeah, pretty much. So if they have nothing to say, when they get the message, they're going to go, well, that's nice, I guess.
I have another theory that their messaging rates are atrocious, so they're not going to be able to respond. Because it does say messaging extraterrestrial intelligence. And, you know, they might not be on an inclusive, unlimited plan like the rest of us.
Can we put them on?
Choose your words wisely, because you can only send 140 characters.
Can we put them in our calling circle? And then maybe they could, you know.
We slapped a gold
record. Whoa, throwback. There we go.
We slapped a gold record on that satellite and sent it off. I don't know what the delay is.
I don't get it. Send more Chuck Berry. All right, let's move on. Chuck, you're up next.
Speaking of Chuck, the Critics' Choice Association has announced the nominees for their inaugural Critics' Choice Super Awards, honoring the best in genre television and movies. Star Trek has picked up 7 nominations. 2 for Discovery, including Best Science Fiction / Fantasy Series and Best Actress in a Science Fiction / Fantasy Series for Sonequa Martin-Green. Picard has 2 nominations. The first is in the same category as Discovery for Best Science Fiction Fantasy Series. Wow, it's Star Trek against Star Trek in that category. What could go wrong? And Sir Patrick Stewart was nominated for Best Actor in a Science Fiction / Fantasy Series. And Lower Decks was nominated for Best Animated Series. Jack Quaid is up for a Best Voice Actor in an Animated Series, as Tawny Newsome was nominated for Best Voice Actress. In addition, the Star Trek franchise will receive a first-ever Legacy Award, which, quote, recognizes the cultural impact Star Trek has had across multiple decades while continuing to appeal and grow its loyal fan base with new stories and characters. Sir Patrick Stewart and Sonequa Martin-Green will accept the award on behalf of the franchise. The winner will be revealed in a special television presentation hosted by writer, director, podcaster Kevin Smith and actress, writer Danny Fernandez. You can watch it on the CW Network on Sunday, January 10th, 2021 at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time / Pacific Time. I guess
broadcast delay by 3 hours. They can do that.
And stream it the next day for free on the CW app at CWTV.com.
It's interesting to note in there that we already saw that Picard and Discovery are in the same category. Mm-hmm. They're in the same category as well in that best science fiction / fantasy series with The Mandalorian,
ooh,
Outlander, Raised by Wolves, Upload, and What We Do in the Shadows.
Hmm.
So very stiff competition there. And Lower Decks, in its best category, is up against Archer, BoJack Horseman, Big Mouth, Central Park, Harley Quinn, and Rick and Morty.
Hmm.
So, of course, that's a bit of a an extra thing there, because you have somebody who worked on Rick and Morty is now in the same category as Rick and Morty for best series.
I also hear a lot of Netflix stuff in there too.
Disney Plus.
Yeah.
A lot of that television stuff is not on television.
Nope.
It's interesting. It's a bad time to come up with that name for that award, I guess.
Yeah, right.
That's a good point. Well, the Critics' Choice is the Critics' Choice Super Awards. It didn't say television in there.
No, that's true. That's true.
Star Trek Universe TV show is nominated. Yeah, okay. Anyway, and finally in Saturn news, producer Herbert Solo has passed away. Those of you familiar with the TOS Trek may recognize his name. It appeared in the final credit in every episode of the show, usually in an image over Baylock's alter ego puppet. Solo was brought in by Lucille Ball after her divorce from Desi Arnaz, and helped revive Desi Lu Studios, where he helped develop and sell Star Trek to NBC after CBS originally turned it down because it had already had Lost in Space. Why would they need 2 space shows?
That's right.
So Solo helped guide Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry on their pitch to the network, and continued to champion the series until Ball herself had got behind the effort. In later years, he felt that many people, himself included, had not received proper credit for their efforts. He co-wrote the book Inside Star Trek, The Real Story, and set the record straight, at least from his point of view, and Solo was 89.
Yeah, I have that book. I've been reading it just by coincidence, and it's interesting to hear all the stories from behind the scenes. He also, if you go onto YouTube, and I used a tiny bit of this in my 50 years of Star Trek, they produced a, I guess it was a companion piece for this called Inside Star Trek, and Herbert Solo emceed it or narrated it. You can only find it on YouTube, and you can only find it with, I think it's Japanese subtitles is the only version that exists anywhere that I could find of the thing. Mm. But you get a lot of behind the scenes stories, and it's kind of like stuff before Larry Nemechek did his type of thing. 'Cause you've got various communications back and forth between the studio and Gene Roddenberry and, mm-hmm. and Solo and things going on that we never saw, or how things developed, including, I think, the opening space, the Final Frontier piece, mm-hmm. about how that was kind of patchworked together out of a series of memos that went back and forth.
That's funny.
All right. And there's no,
it's really funny how some of that stuff came together and we had really no idea. Just there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, especially with this, you know, I always have to remind people that everything they did for the original series, love it or hate it, they had to figure it all out from ground zero. You know, there was no concept of what this show was.
Yeah.
And everything that has come since has been able to, as we say, stand on the shoulders of giants and go, okay, here's how it works. Now here's what we do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. And there's no new Trek-related news to report out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. Hmm. But our thoughts go out to the good people of Vulcan as they continue to struggle with COVID. Things will eventually get back to normal, and when they do, we'll be here to report on and poke fun at all the Trek activities that take place in Vulcan.
Well, this would now, be a big good time to cosplay the costume from the Tholian web, you know, with the beekeeper's outfit.
I thought you were going to cosplay the Tholian web itself.
Which
more bizarre.
But there's plenty of costumes you can use that are, you know, safe to wear in this environment.
I think you should cosplay Linus,
Chuck. And sneeze on everybody?
Yeah. Except if you've got a helmet on as a mask, it's really not going to work the way you think it's going to work. So,
you know, people will come up to you. I love you, Slee Stack.
You're in the land of the lost, my friend.
This is not the land
of the lost. Wrong franchise.
This is not the land of the lost.
Yeah, and it taps on the badge again and leaves. All right. Now, we've covered a lot of stories, but there are 94 additional stories we did not have the time to cover. Mm. But if you go to the show notes for episode 80 over at thetopicistrek.com, you can find all of those stories. And they include everything from Zachary Quinto admitting he is totally down with performing a wedding ceremony dressed as Spock.
I would want that.
I will add for $1 million.
Oh,
yeah.
A little I did want that.
The headline. Yeah.
Times are rough.
I did want it.
You can also find great Star Trek holiday gift ideas, all sorts of things in these stories. So please go check them out. All right. And that wraps up Subspace Chatter. So it's time to say goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
No.
Percy didn't want the chatter. Now he wants to stay. Make up your mind, kid.
He just, you know, he's a kid. What can you do? Ah, those tweens. What can I tell you? All right. Now we're on to main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. That'll do.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I'll give it a meh. It's okay. All right.
Yeah.
Since we have three episodes to discuss. Oh, my goodness. Oh, now we're getting all the buttons.
Buttons aren't toys.
Stop pressing the buttons.
I had to build that bamboo ladder to climb up to the soundboard. All right.
Was that I forget whether it was a story from Next Generation or some of the Trek series where they had to tell somebody to stop playing with the buttons on set. Because every time they were in a shot and they were like playing with the panels, pressing buttons, that meant the sound guy and effects had to put in a beep for every single one of those.
It's a
things.
Bit like interviewing on a podcast and you get someone who throws in the occasional F-bombs, like, more editing for me.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought you were going to say it was probably that TNG episode where, you know, they find the three people in the cryogenic freeze.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, by the way, that episode, I know we got to move along, but I got to ask that something. Okay, that episode, those three people were in space, right? They found them in space. So when they were frozen, weren't they on Earth? How they accidentally just get ejected into space? Did they launch them?
I want you to refer to Futurama, and then you can figure out how they get frozen while they were on Earth. And
fell into
exactly how it happens. They fell backwards by mistake into those two.
All three of them.
I mean, I was trying to figure out how their canister or how they ended up in space.
I don't remember the episode well enough to have you seen it recently. I can't recall if they actually mentioned how that happened or not.
I'm going to go back and watch it.
Yeah, they didn't say how they got into space, but I do believe they mentioned that they got frozen because they all had a medical condition and they hoped it could get fixed in the future, which it did.
Carpal tunnel syndrome. It was simpler times back then.
I'm suffering from COVID-19. I hope it gets solved in the future.
From a hangnail.
Yeah. Rather drastic measures, don't you think? Right. Hey, it's a really big hangnail. So
cryogenic freeze for you, buddy.
Yep.
Here's
my bill with interest.
Answer,
oh my God.
Answer to everything. Freeze them.
Yeah, freeze them. I got some bill. Right. Freeze them.
I don't know. Was this our main mission? No, our main mission was not this. No, okay.
Sorry.
But since we have three episodes to discuss this time around, and that's a lot of recap to deal with. So we've decided, meaning I've decided, that we're going to have a bit of fun with this. So sit back and relax while we go through the major points in Scavengers, Unification 3, and The Sanctuary. And we're going to begin with Chuck.
Right off the bat, Discovery is now designated as NCC-1031A. No, it didn't blow up first. So if you're thinking, if you're envisioning it going down in flames on planet Genesis, just forget that image. Okay.
My God, Saru, what have I done?
Did what you always do. Gave us a fighting chance to live. Although Starfleet records didn't say it. Weird, right? Instead, it's been through a major facelift. They retrofitted her with new systems, programmable matter, detachable warp nacelles, and even, dare I say it, holodecks.
Dun, dun, dun.
Although I can't wait to see if Patchy is still around. Hi, I'm Patchy. Oh, man. The crew gets in on this, too. They all got TRICOM badges. The writers must have had really a lot of fun inventing the future, just making up new stuff like they were in the 60s going, what do you think the year 2400 will look like? These things are communicators, holopads, tricorders, and personal transporters. As we found out, Linus has some trouble getting the hang of that last part. Just walking through a door would have been easier, Linus. Speaking of Linus, it's also molting season, so everybody get out your fish scraper scalers and carrot peelers, and you know, they're literally picking on him, poor guy. You think that they would have something like, another animal that feeds off the dead skin or something? Wouldn't that be?
Yeah, they should pair him up on the ship. Yeah. Anyway, so now Lieutenant Detmer is still having issues. She's not a fan of her new controls, so she has engineering retrofit the retrofitted controls. But don't worry, she gets better. An attack run on the Viridian Asira's battle cruiser does a lot to bring her confidence back, but we're not sure if Dr. Culber wants to prescribe that as a standard treatment protocol. You know, every week she's going up. Yeah, go blow something up. So Dr. Culber also has a deal with Giorgio. The Empress is having a crippling set of flashes of the Terran Empire. Once it even made her skin go all spiky for a second. And I have a theory about that. But anyway, another time, one of her episodes nearly ruins the rescue mission on, I started to say Honolulu.
No.
Hanau.
Hun Hao? I don't know. How Hun Hao? No, no, Hun Hao. Yes.
I thought what it was
Hao Hun.
Hao Hun.
Not Kun Lun.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be the wrong franchise.
So the story is the book was being held as forced labor on that planet. The place is one big salvage depot. It turns out Book went looking for one of those Federation Starship black boxes, the ones that Burnham is using to investigate the burn.
Yep.
So Book makes friends with a fellow slave, an Andorian named Rin. Rin got on Osiris's bad side. She cut off his antennae and sent him to Hun Hao. Oh, did I mention Hun Hao was run by the Emerald Chain? Well, because that's kind of important to the whole story. Anyway, after a Bajoran gets his head blown off while trying to escape, Book and Rin stage another escape. But thanks to that rescue mission by Giorgio and Burnham, this one works. Yeah, Burnham pulled another unauthorized mission by going to Hun Hao. Tilly even told Saru that he had to report it to Admiral Vance.
Mm-hmm. And I liked that she was kind of stepping into that role before she stepped into that role. Like, well, you got to tell them, otherwise it's going to come down on all of us, and they're going to say those are rebels from the 24th century. Speaking of Tilly, we find out that she's not really much of a cat person.
I didn't see that.
Grudge. Oh, and she also gets offered the post of interim first officer. At first she's like, no way. And then she's like, yes way. Now she's doing important stuff like helping Saru. We're going to tell how she got that role in the next paragraph. So hang on with me. Helping Saru come up with a catchphrase and barking at people that want to speak to the captain. I thought that was funny that some of those catchphrases just felt flat. Like he says them and the crew looks around like, what are we supposed to do when he says that?
Yeah. What does he
push the button? I don't know.
But
carry on. I'm like, what?
we're going to get to that at the end of the show. Hold on.
I'm sorry. Okay.
But back to Burnham. Admiral Vance and Captain Saru were not happy with her trip to Hun Hao. Burnham gets booted from her first officer duties, which is why it got offered to Tilly that we just described. See how I hooked those two together? Amazing. And she's sent back to being just a science officer. Looks like holding down both spots was just one thing Spock could do better.
Yeah.
Ow! Sibling slam.
Hmm. Oh, and speaking of Spock, we get to see him, sort of. Okay, it's from a recording, but Burnham gets to find out that her brother led the efforts to reunify the Vulcans and the Romulans. Spoiler alert. For the crew of the Discovery, the Romulans are related to the Vulcans. Didn't see that coming, did we? Oh, wait, we actually knew.
Yeah, we knew that already.
We knew that. Book nails it when he says that Burnham's whole family are chronic overachievers. Anyway, these guys have data that Burnham needs. See, the black box data confirmed that the three Federation ships exploded at slightly different times. So the burn was not necessarily instantaneous. But Discovery needs to go and find some more information to pinpoint the source. Information that Vulcan has on the Project SB-19. It's not Vulcan. Could help pinpoint the source of the burn, Navarre.
Now, the bad news. Admiral Vance says Vulcan is now called Navarre.
Spoiler alert. I'm sorry.
See, I kind of had that covered. Anyway, Romulans and Vulcans both live there now. Navarre thinks it caused the burn with their SB-19 project. They left the Federation a century ago, and they don't want to talk about it, so stop asking. Oh, and Vance doesn't even mention the fact that Romulus blew up. I guess that's just too much to take at one time. So Discovery jumps to Navarre using the spore drive, and Stamets doesn't feel a thing. And that's because Adira Tall upped the interface, and now Stamets just sticks his hands into goo. Oh, that's pretty cool, right?
You're soaking in it.
Yes, as we spin. Adira also tells Stamets about seeing Gray Tall, and Stamets gets it. He's been there. They are so bonding.
I want to know how much footage Michael had to go through to find that clip of Spock it for the reunification stuff. Did she get to the part where, Captain, are you sure a colorful metaphor is not appropriate here? Like, fast forward past that part.
Yes, a little faster, please. A little faster, yeah.
Meanwhile, back on Navarre Burton?
No. Right.
Since Burnham is a graduate of the Vulcan Science Academy, go Delta Sigma Delta. Hey. Well, she invokes the T'Kall Inket, not the T'Kall Outket, the Inket, different thing. It's a kind of debate club where Burnham defends her hypothesis that Navarre didn't have anything to do with the burn. And she gets an advocate to help her, a member of the Kawat Malat. No, it is not Elnor. He's not around anymore. But who do you think it is? Get this. It's her mother, Gabriel Burnham. What? Crazy, right? But the quorum that confront Burnham is rather conflicted, if not all messed up. They fight like an old married couple. Then Gabriel, Michael's mom, piles in on that. It was rough, especially since Michael was having second thoughts about staying in Starfleet. But Gabriel finally gets her daughter to speak some absolute candor, because that's what the Kawat Malat does.
It's
right?
What we do.
We don't hold back. Mommy, that lady is fat. Oh, you must be a Kawat Malat kid, right?
Almost absolute candor.
Well, your email to Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
That doesn't impress the quorum, but the Vulcan president slips Michael the SB-19 data in a DM to Michael's mom. Ooh, nice. And the president is totally into talking with Saru about this and that of the Federation. I do like the way Michael just put it on the line. She said, well, you know what? If you two are going to go back to fighting, I'm just going to walk away and it's not worth it.
That's right. I can take my ball and go home.
That was very Spock of her.
And side note, Michael Burnham had earned her doctorates by defending her hypothesis. Just saying. Anyway, so lucky them, but you know who wasn't so lucky?
Who?
Do you know who?
I do.
The green nephew, Tolar, he was in charge of the Emerald Chain's salvage operation on Hun Hao. Remember the guy that Giorgio ran all over? This was before his aunt fed him to a trance worm.
Ooh, nasty.
Yeah, then those worms, like the one we saw on Bookship in the episode of in the first of the season, they originate on Book's homeworld of Kenjon.
It's right there phonetically for you, Craig. It's right there for you phonetically. You messed it up. Kuijon.
That's what I said.
Yeah, no, that's not. Move on.
I said so. Whatever. Anyway, speaking of Book, this isn't his real name. It's Tarex.
Not T-Rex.
No, that's different altogether.
Bang a gong. Get arms. It on.
It's a bad idea.
Anyway.
Even the man he calls his brother, Kahim, doesn't know where the name Book comes from, although Book promises to tell him the next time he returns to Kuijon. Is that better for you?
I think you got a little phlegm in there. Yeah,
sounds Klingon at that point, doesn't it?
Speaking of Kuijon, Osiris stops supplying sea locust repellent to the planet. Yeah, that's a thing. That's so mean of her, too. So she wants Rin, the Andorian, back, and she knows he escaped Hun Hao with Book. See, Rin knows that the Emerald Chain is running out of dilithium, and because Rin didn't pinky swear he wouldn't tell anyone, Osiris wants to vaporize him. But things don't end up going so great for Osiris because of that whole Detmer disables their offensive weapons thing. Mm-hmm. But now she's really mad, and she's all, of course, you realize this means war, and she leaves. Then Discovery helps Book and his brother ask the sea locusts to go back to the sea, because that's why they're called sea locusts and not land locusts.
And not floaty spider thingies.
they get it and they go. And what's up with Burnham and Book? Well, there's lots. At first, Burnham tells Giorgio, there's nothing up. Mind your business. Then they totally kiss in the turbo lift after Linus leaves. Then they get intimate on Book's ship right there on the hangar deck. And then when Burnham decides she's going to stay in Starfleet, Book is sad. Federation makes it make things happen by saving his home world, and he's all into that now. So he wants to be part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What did we forget? What did we forget? Oh, right. The burn. Using the black.
Oh, pocket. The burn.
Oh, feel the burn. Yes. Using the black box and SB-19 data, Stamets and Adira Tal locate the origin of the burn. It came from the Verubin?
I didn't spell that phonetically, sorry.
That's all right. It's like a regular Reuben, but it's a future Reuben sandwich. They came from the Reuben sandwich. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Oi.
And get a this.
Sandwich. A little coleslaw on the side of that nebula. It's amazing.
And get this. That song that everyone seems to know, It's a Small World After All.
Oh, not that song.
No? That's what happened to Vulcan, right? Hey, wait a minute. If Vulcan imploded, how could they have taken...
That's the other... That's the Kelvin verse.
Okay. Wow. Okay, well, yeah, that one that Admiral Tall's parents sang to him, it's being transmitted by the nebula.
Dun, dun, dun! And that's not the song. Dun, dun, dun! It's not the song.
Dun, 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 dun,
and on
dun,
top
dun.
Of that, there's a Federation Starship distress beacon coming out of there, too. Help us! Adira Tal, who finally lets people know they want folks to use the proper pronouns, writes a program to decode the message. I guess we found a giant hole in the 31st century Starfleet database. Come on, guys. Old Starfleet is calling you out. They could call up NASA codes in, like, an instant to stop V'ger.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I bet they lost those codes in 1,000 years. Okay, that's it. Anything else? Oh, Jet Reno. I started to say Janet Reno. That's not the same.
Whoa.
It's not the same at all. Not
I don't know where my mind was going there. Jet Reno. Yeah, she was in one of these. I guess she's still working on some names to call Stamets. Haven't seen her in a little bit. So, I mean, come on. Some of the ones that she's been using lately are kind of lame. She needs to step up her game.
Cranky pants.
She's working on that. She's working on that. And that is a recap of those three episodes.
Da, 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 da.
This is why we don't normally do three episodes at once, folks. But anyway, so thoughts on the three episodes we just recapped?
You're talking to us or the listeners?
You guys, because the listeners, it's kind of hard to hear what they're saying to us. So
I'm trying to listen. Anyway, I'll tell you, first off, to start off with, I'd like seeing Detmer really do some serious flying, you know, something mm-hmm. small and
manual
nimble,
controls.
And like Book's ship. Excuse me,
Chuck? I thought when she went to manual controls and she was like bombarding a Cyrus ship, that felt very kind of Star Wars. Like, here's the Millennium Falcon attacking a Star Destroyer again. So I was having a bit of flashback to the other
maybe
popular space series. There were a couple of good lines. I'm going to go through this quick, but I do have 6 pages of notes, so I'm just going to hit the highlights.
Oh, my.
I've thought it was interesting that we're still doing baryon sweeps in the 31st century.
Yes, and the baryon sweeps are interesting because that is from a buildup due to warp travel. Yep. So clearly mm-hmm. some of the ships are able to use warp travel enough that they get the... Now, they're usually done, was it every 5 years?
Something like
and
that.
Goodness knows that might be longer because they're not making as many trips.
But. Right.
I can't remember the time. I remember the episode where they did on the
TNG.
Enterprise D.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just make sure the barber gets his horse riding saddle.
Okay. Right.
I love how Book's ship kind of turned into pieces and turned around.
Mm-hmm. Which makes scavengers. Sense. In a way, right?
Well, if they can have detached nacelles, you can detach just about everything else, too. As long as you don't detach the crew from, you know, like life support.
No, don't do that. That's a bad thing. You don't want to do that.
Let's see. Notes. I do like when Saru asked Tilly to be the first officer. She says, she kind of has doubts and says, Are you asking me because I'm qualified or compliant?
Like, right, wow. Which I thought was very astute of her. I mean, let's face it. You know, she's seen what Burnham does. And so she's just wondering, well, are you going to make me first officer? Because I won't do that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I had another one on here. What was it?
Did anyone else have a problem with, not problem, but just, it seemed odd that given the amount of time that she was there, because she wasn't really any older than we saw her last, I'm talking about Gabrielle Burnham, that she was now a full member of the Kwat Malat.
Yeah, I do like the fact that they brought that sect along from Picard, that it's still around. But I was wondering, how did she get there and become part of that so fast?
Well, you know, she got pulled back separate from the suit, got back pulled into the future, back to her place. And they said that they had found her and took care of her. And that's where she kind of got enthralled with the.
Well, she said she got pulled back to the same planet, I think, that Burnham lands on. The same planet that they had held her at, right when the suit appeared and they kept in the force field, she bounced right back there again, and then colonists found her and took her to the Kwat Malat. So I don't have any problem with all of that. It's just that we see her on that planet talking to Burnham, you know, in last season. Mm-hmm. She doesn't look really any older, and now she's a full-on Kwat Malat. I would expect an extended period of time to take place for her to get indoctrinated into, you know, this order. And
she aced the exam. That's they have an entrance exam, and she aced it.
Oh, I see. She
exempted everything.
What to do? I get it. Yeah, okay.
She exempted it. Well, you know. Well, she's been there for probably slightly over a year, you know, beyond what Burnham's been there. So remember, Burnham's been there for a whole year,
right?
Before she got back to the Discovery. So,
what did you think of him referring to Book as the Blob Whisperer? I thought that was kind of funny. I do like how, like you said, Giorgio walks all over T'Lor.
Yeah.
And was that who she was talking about when she said, form a sentence?
Yeah. Like, she was putting him in his place. Hey, can you make a decision? Can you form a sentence here? Can you make decisions on your own?
But it's nice to know that his aunt thinks much more highly of him.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that doesn't work out so well. I think
that was rough, by the way. Worm grabbed him and start slinging it. I was like, oh my gosh.
There was no trance involved in that.
I mean, he was kind of out of it. He was a little subdued. He's like, auntie, please. Whomp.
He was more like shock worm instead of trank.
I thought that Michael going rogue a couple of times felt very Kirk-like. You know, way to bend the rules to say, I'm going to do the right thing rather than the Starfleet thing right here. I know this has to be done, and this is the way I'm going to do it. So I like that kind of callback to the Kirk ethos.
Right. Yeah, and Vance says, you know, I put you in the brig. Well, first of all, he says, and I love this line, I'm going to paraphrase probably, but he says, you don't get a pass from saving all of everything. So I'm thinking, if you can't get a pass for saving the future.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What can you get a pass for?
No kidding.
What are you gonna do to get a pass? What's a person gonna do to get a pass if that doesn't work? But you know, he says she's not in the brig because she ended up saving lives, you know, on the mission.
Did anyone else notice at the end of episode 7, Unification 3, they're aboard Book's ship. There was this low hum. I couldn't tell if it was the ship or if Grudge was nearby, because it certainly sounded like a cat purring. It did. It was. Like, is that a native sound to his ship? Because, or is Grudge sitting next to the sound technician's microphone again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be.
Shoot.
Go see Tilly. No, Tilly doesn't want to see you. Never mind. Forget it.
Yeah, why did they put the A on the Discovery?
Well, I was thinking about that, and I think it's two reasons. One, because, and I say that in the recap, because I try to cover everything in the recap, literally all the plot points I tried to get through there, mm-hmm. is that according to Starfleet, the Discovery was destroyed at that fight with Control. That is the cover story, that it was destroyed. And so this is A. This is not Discovery. This is Discovery-A. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think the second reason is because it went through such a major refit. I mean, they detached in the cells. There are definitely major changes. If you look at the old Discovery and the new Discovery, a lot of that ship has changed. The shape of certain things, the shape of the neck connecting the primary and secondary hulls is different. Mm-hmm. Window placement is different. There is now, I think there's that gap now in the struts where it was a solid piece before. Mm-hmm. I think there's now an indent at the, either there's now an indent or they remove the indent at the bottom of the triangular hull. So much has been done to that ship.
It's effectively not the same ship.
You could argue that was also another reason why you'd make it A.
I see. Okay. Well, no, that makes sense, I guess.
So you think we're going to be seeing Osira and the Emerald Chain again?
It's over. It's over.
Osira kind of left in a bad mood, didn't she?
She did. And I don't know whether she's being set up as an ongoing baddie, because as we know, they're already going to start working on the fourth season. You know, is she intended to be something that is just the villain of the story arc, or because, you know, the Emerald Chain presumably has a big grip on a lot of the known galaxy.
Yeah. Because I think the Admiral said that he was tracking a 50 worlds.
Yeah, at least 50 worlds.
I thought
the Orion Syndicate was supposed to be the baddies. I mean, they're still
around.
The Orion Syndicate now,
I believe, is essentially the Emerald Chain.
Oh, it's
Didn't
they call it the Andorian Orion Syndicate? It's got a partnership or something now, and they renamed it the Emerald Chain.
So I see them working together, which is why you would have Rin working with Osira until he wasn't.
Right. Okay. So they're on their last legs. At least that's what we're led to believe now, because they're running out of dilithium like everybody else.
And I wonder, does Discovery, I know that they put the major store of the dilithium onto Book Ship, but has any of that transferred over to Starfleet headquarters, or do they still have it all? Which to me seems, hey, how about sharing a little bit of this with your buddies in the fleet here?
Well, they kind of lost a lot on Hun Han.
Not that much, really.
But they had a suitcase full, and they go, "Oh, great!" And then they, you know, kind of blew up the place, got in a fight, and like, what, nobody grabbed the suitcase full of dilithium.
I don't think that the lithium was in the suitcase, because when they get on board ship, they find the container of dilithium hidden away on the ship. So I think they never intended to bring it down with them, or the suitcase was something else. I don't know. I just get that feeling, because why else then would they find the dilithium on the ship?
I swear they were in Toller's office and they opened it up. They said, "Show me the goods," and here it is. Okay, there's this big suitcase full of pink crystally stuff.
All right. Then I guess the additional dilithium was the stuff that they were using, that Book Ship was using, maybe? Because she did give him, Burnham did give him dilithium.
And why, when they came, I loved, Tilly came up with that plan about, what if we had another ship and one of our officers kind of went rogue? Yeah. I like her thinking. She's really starting to fill out in that first officer role.
But it didn't quite work out like they hoped.
Well, it didn't, because Osira calls him out on it, and he doesn't go, "I don't know what's going on. Who's that?" You know, he didn't fall back to the plan.
No, that is, The ship comes out of the back of Discovery.
Yeah.
Hey,
there is that.
Hey,
but you know,
Detmer, you should really get back here now, or else
Discovery should have shot a couple of shots over their bow, like they were, get out of here, whack, whack.
Right, right. Yeah.
Where's Tilly there? Huh?
Yeah, I thought, I'm with you, Chuck. I thought it was a great plan. And then I thought, but where was the execution of that as the plan?
Right. I was missing a back end of that argument.
Yeah.
Well, Tilly's still, you know, like working things out. So, I'm an idea person. I don't have all the details worked out on this stuff.
What do you mean? She's a data-driven computer mathematics junkie.
Well, yeah, she can give you a spreadsheet with the plan, but that's going to take a while.
I'm going to science my way out of this ship battle. No, this is the time for that, Tilly.
Yeah.
So we also had a bunch of Easter eggs, and I only jotted down a couple of them. We have the USS Le Guin, which we assume is a reference to the late, great author Ursula Le Guin. And then we have the USS Yelchin, which mm-hmm. is obviously a nod to Anton Yelchin, the actor who played Chekhov in the J.J. Abrams films and passed away.
Right.
We see a Next Generation phaser, which someone pointed out a problem with something involved with that. And we also have favorite Easter egg, and even Bonnie noticed this one right away. They go down to the planet, and they start looking for self-sealing stem bolts.
Yes, oh, yeah. I loved that. You have to wonder if, you know, Jake and Nog were in on that deal in some way.
But the TNG phaser, someone pointed out, now was Giorgio just taking an educated guess? Because how would she know when that type of phaser was a thing? It's after Discovery. How would she be able to know that that's 24th century?
Well, when they got to the 31st century, they had all that historical information they could suck up.
Yeah.
So she just went directly to weapons.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know what? She might have.
Exactly. What weapons have been invented in the last 9 centuries? Because that's what an empress from the Terran Empire would do.
Yeah. Which ones can I get my hands on? That's the important part.
I don't think that's too far-fetched.
Side note of recent events, since we were talking about Senatol, they, them, their, Ellen Page has mm-hmm. come out and said that she is now trans and is addressed as Elliot Page, which I think is mm-hmm. really cool. So that was some news this past week.
Yeah. Okay. And if you watch the Ready Room, I'm spacing on the two actors that play Adira and Gray, mm-hmm. but they were on there talking with Will Wheaton, and they were talking about some of that particular scene where she says, "I want you to address me as they or them, rather than, you know,
her, or
me,
she.
Yeah. Or, you know, you, that kind of thing, or he, well, she, whatever.
She specifically, but
yeah, she." And so, it was interesting because she said the writers had pretty much got that some of her own experiences as coming out trans, even to her parents and everybody, you know, that some of those same experiences were kind of reflected in what she was delivering there on screen. Mm-hmm. Even though she was actually coming out to friends and family at the time they were starting to shoot Discovery. So, so she said, Anthony Rapp actually was helping her out, being pretty kind about it, you know, and
cool.
And after some of the scenes, he was looking at her like, you okay? You know, you're okay. Yeah.
If you're going through that in real life at pretty much the same time, it's gotta, you know.
Yeah.
And she said, I didn't tell this to anyone else other than Gray. Now the presumption is that she wants Stamets to tell other people, because clearly that way, because when Culber comes along, he's using the same pronouns, And one would presume that everyone else will be doing so. And
well, I imagine that Kober and Stamets would talk because they're a couple.
I think once they're in a conversation where several people in the room at the same time, it's kind of going to leap out that suddenly, if it's not Adira, it's they, them. They go, so it seemed like, okay, that was telling him first, and he was going to help guide the process of getting everyone to understand this. Although I think that probably by that time in the future, not even 31st century, but by Discovery's time, they're like, okay, that's not a big deal. Sure. We're down with that. So. It's not a problem.
I should hope so.
Right.
And what did everybody think about seeing Spock?
It took me for a moment. I was like, whoa, I didn't expect it right off. I didn't really expect to see what I saw. Of course, I remembered exactly where I was from. But yeah, it just kind of caught me off guard at first, but it was great to see.
I liked it. I thought it was a good way to bring in like archive footage. I was kind of curious why it wasn't, a little more high def or something. It was just this floating holographic see-through image that was, I don't know. It felt a little low tech for, if they can do, the on-screen communications are now like 3D holo, like the person's actually standing on the bridge talking to you.
Yeah, but first of all, that probably wasn't the way it was recorded. I don't mean on television. I mean, at the time, because Next Generation didn't have that kind of thing going on. So you would have to extrapolate it. So there's that, but also, let's face it, for production time, you'd have to.
I know.
Well, this is going to kind of look like Leonard Nimoy. You got to go with us.
If they can colorize old black and white movies.
Very badly, though.
Turn them into HD.
CBS didn't want to pony up the money to. Upfit Captain Picard's archival footage.
Uplift.
No, I just think that given the choices you could do to make that happen, I think just going with, for better lack of a better term, the 2D or flat file version of it is probably the best way to go, because it's what you remember, it's what was happening at the time, and I think it makes it better
presentation
than trying to do it as something else.
I like how they mentioned that it was part of Admiral Picard's archival footage. Like he's sitting there taking a selfie or,
Look at me, I'm here with Spock. Hey.
Hey, live long and prosper.
Don't give me that sarcastic Vulcan salute, Picard. Just don't do it.
Yeah. But they did mention Picard's name. And of course, nobody flinched and went, oh, but it just kind of like played it off like, And then, of course,
Well, I don't think they'd really have the context because they jumped right over him.
Right.
I mean, they were.
No, they shouldn't know. That's what I'm saying. They shouldn't know. Right. I didn't expect them to go, who?
The great Admiral Jean-Luc Picard. I love his wine. Yes.
Kind of expensive though.
It's vintage.
I did kind of like seeing Tilly agonize over actually taking the first,
the first officer job,
officer position.
Been there, done that. I mean, when somebody hands you a job offer and you have to think about it real hard and you can lose some sleep over it, I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, and it felt. I was wondering how the bridge crew was feeling about this, because the thing that Saru first cites is that she's traveled through a wormhole into the future. And I thought, and so has everyone on the bridge traveled through. But he went on to talk about how she was dealing with the transition and helping others deal with the transition and stepping up in that role of that. And while she may not be his final choice for first officer, because he did mention it as interim, that he sees that as a benefit and a plus to, let's face it, to him as the captain, because he did a very bad job of it at Thanksgiving. But, you know, to everyone on the ship to be able to do that.
So he'll find a new first officer and she'll end up as counselor is what I'm hearing.
Just don't make it a defense of the dark arts, defense against the dark arts teacher, like the captain's chair has been, you know, the past three seasons. Oh, Harry Potter crossover there. All right. Any other thoughts on the three episodes? I think one thing we talked about was very briefly the previews for next week. And one shot in particular, I think, struck all of us as we're watching it, because we see a uniform that one of these things is not like the others. And that is
talking about the preview at the end of the ready room?
I didn't see the ready room yet. So I'm talking about the preview that's at the end of the episode, The Sanctuary, where we see a shot of someone in what appears to be, and it goes by very quickly, so it's still for him to see if it's exactly, but a next generation uniform. Right. Standing in the middle of, like, looks like standing in the middle of sick bay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Actually, that is exactly what I'm saying. At the end of ready room, there is a minute or maybe, you know, a little bit longer piece from just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he is standing there with the first, second season TNG with no collar, a uniform.
The one piece uniform. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell you what he said or do you want to?
If played as a clip, we might as well go ahead. It's not a spoilery if it's. They played the clip already.
Yeah, they played the clip. So they were talking about Philippa Giorgio and how she was not feeling well. And David Cronenberg's character was there again. And he says, oh, well, you should have asked me about this a while back. I could have told you. And Culber's like, well, I didn't know the to ask you. I didn't know you had medical training. He says, well, I don't, but I know a lot of stuff. And he says that when people during the temporal wars, that they found out, you know, they could time travel pretty well, but the problem was people would get sick. And not only that, but Philippa is from another universe or another dimension and time traveled. So they think he's saying that that's probably why she's not feeling right because of her. She's so far out of sync, so to speak.
Yeah.
With the rest of the universe. So he was talking about this guy named Yor, and that's the alien you see standing there in the uniform. And he said that Yor was the only other person that went from another dimension and then also time traveled and explaining that was the problem with him.
Does he turn into a transporter accident? I don't know. Just kind of like
a pile of goo on the ground. I don't know, but yeah, it was kind of funny to see that uniform. I was like, whoa, you know, wasn't expecting that in this episode or in part of this episode or season. That's where that. And then I saw some speculation online, totally speculation, that somebody said, temporal wars, you know, wonder if that has something to do with, bringing that Kelvin timeline in a little bit.
Oh, that reminds me. They were, In Sanctuary, they were referring to some plan that they did on Kaminar. Did I miss something? What was the analogy there? Of same way we did this on Kaminar.
They were broadcasting the signal to the Kelpians.
Okay, to do what?
I'm trying to remember. They were had to do with the. Calling.
I'm
sorry that screaming at their headphones. Yeah. that I'm not remembering.
You stupid idiots! You don't remember.
No,
it was a couple of years ago.
But I do recall the episode. I do recall that they were doing that, and I recall that Saru was in that chamber where the other species was, and
That's what it was.
Doing that from within the room. I think it involved that process of the shedding, you know, of
they're from quote docile to evolution.
Right. And that everyone on the planet was experiencing it at the same time by what they were doing.
Okay. So they used Book and Kaleem's empathic abilities. They amplified them somehow through the ship to get the sea locust go back into the sea.
Okay. Right. So where they belong, because that's their name. Yes.
So now Discovery has a way to broadcast and make people do what they should do. Sounds like a mind control thing gone horribly wrong.
No, because they were just amplifying something that was going to happen to all the Kelpians regardless. It just wasn't all going to happen at the same time, but it was going to happen to all of them regardless.
They were able to persuade the sea locust to go back into the ocean.
Well, they were able to amplify the empathic message.
Yeah.
But even Book says, we can't tell them to do it. We can just ask them to do it.
Okay.
So suggest it heavily.
Doesn't sound like a dangerous weapon to anyone else.
Yeah, no, but Discovery, you know that every Starfleet ship can only broadcast Beastie Boys.
Oh, that's right. When that's
and nothing ever bad happened listening to the Beastie Boys.
No, not at all. Oh, by the way, I do have a little side note, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this guy on Twitter. I happened to pull up Twitter for something. I don't go to Twitter a whole lot anymore.
It's a bad thing the universe happens. I happened to open up Twitter for something, and yes.
Well, I have a Star Trek list, and anyway, so this guy named Noah Averbach Katz.
Okay.
His last name's hyphenated, so Averbach Katz. He actually plays Wren on Discovery, the Andorian. And so he had since this was the first when I saw this was the episode that he premiered in, and I had a little video, and it wasn't just a video of him on the show. It was a video of, it looked like something that, that you probably would have put together, Clinton, where he was a kid. He had a Star Trek uniform on. He had a video camera recording whoever he was getting a signature from, you know, and throughout the years as he got older, all the way to where he finally was on Star Trek, and he was as Wren, the Blue Andorian. And cool. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I replied to him, and he's, you know, said, look forward to seeing you on the show tonight. And then I happened to see it on, he must have posted it on Reddit also, because I saw the same thing. And so I kind of I did a back and forth with him really quick. And I said, look forward to seeing you on the show. And then after the show was over, it was cool to go, hey, you did a great job. And he was like, thanks. And, you know, the whole thing. I thought it was kind of cool that I was just interacting with the guy who was on the show we saw.
And he got to be in not just one, but at least so far, two episodes.
Yeah. Well, he's been in two. Yeah, at least two. So I think it's really cool. Anyway, especially when a fan, you know, a deep fan gets a shot to actually be on one of the shows, it's pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool indeed.
So when's your shot, Clinton?
I don't know. I'll have to, somebody get on the phone with Alex Kurtzman, please. It probably doesn't have my email address correct, and it's just sending it to the wrong place. Okay, good. We'll get that taken care of, all squared away.
Get your secretary on it.
Yeah, which is also me. So it's let's move on to a warp speed roundtable. This time around, in honor of what poor Saru is going through or making Tilly go through and everyone on the bridge crew, if you were the captain of the Discovery, what would your catchphrase be? I will go first.
Yes, go first.
With the challenge. Everybody.
Oh, that was your catchphrase. Go first.
I will go first.
Yeah, I would get the same look that Saru was getting. Right. No, mine's going to be, everyone, hold on to your badges. And then off you go. Yeah, hold on to carefully, though, so they don't transport
hold
away.
Hold on to your panties.
Yeah. All right. Who wants to go next with their catchphrase?
You, Chuck.
Oh, I came up with a couple. What the first one was obvious. It was punch it.
Punch it.
Or put it. But I thought about put the pedal to the metal, but that wouldn't make any sense to anybody in that century other than like the one guy from Earth who knows history. And then, of course,
David Cronenberg would nod. And the, oh, I get
the
it,
one
I
that
get
would it. Get old and stale the fastest was at the end of Undiscovered Country. Mm. Second star to the right, and then the whole crew on the bridge has to say in unison, and straight on to yeah, morning.
Until tomorrow.
Yeah. If I had a dime for every someone, time, but like we don't have money.
Yeah. If I had a bar had of died, Latinum.
I don't know.
I had a bar of Latinum every time he said that.
Okay. And what about you, Craig? What would your, I know you're having trouble with catchphrases, obviously, at the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
but
that's why we left him for show. We left him for
you
last.
You have a perfect catchphrase. If you are the captain of the Discovery and you're sitting there in the chair and it's time for action and you say,
kick it like Jackie Chan.
Wow. That was so not worth the wait.
Yeah. And then well, Linus goes,
Yabba-dabba-doo.
Linus goes, who?
I would go with Yabba-dabba-doo actually instead. It's like clearly.
Sir, a course is laid in. Yabba-dabba-doo it. There you go.
So I don't know. Do you get the feeling that Saru is still looking or is he going to get, or did he land on carry on?
He was stealing my stick at the beginning of this show.
He was totally.
He's scrolling through all the catchphrases for the last 1,000 years.
I mean, using somebody else's, you know, although it's a secret, right? Because Tilly is talking to Saru about it in the corridor. And when somebody else is walking along, she's like, lowers her voice and stops talking and then goes back to talking again.
Yeah.
And then she gives the phrases and he doesn't like I forget the one that sounds very deadly that he doesn't like that. But anyway, that one, Tilly says, yeah, nobody likes that one. Well, who's the nobody then? Who else is she sharing this stuff with?
Yeah. Was she got a focus group?
Yeah, it didn't test well in Sheboygan, so you can't use that one.
Didn't test well on Kaminar.
Yeah.
Actually, I was when she was trying to talk about it, I was like, wow, what's going on? Why is she whispering, you know, or keeping it hush hush? And I was like, oh, he's looking for something to say. That's funny.
Well, that's why I said now she's, you know, now that Tilly's the first officer, she's taking on the important roles, like coming up with catchphrases for the captain to use, you know.
Yeah.
Highly important stuff. All right. But it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and try. Ooh, I keep forgetting to mention that we have dilithium, or I keep mentioning that we have dilithium, and I really shouldn't anymore. So yeah. Time to refill something.
It's not a problem unless you expect somebody to be listening to this podcast in about
okay, in that
thousand
case,
years.
There's no problem at all.
We went back
all
to right. Internal combustion engines.
Yeah. Time to throw some coal in the
intake in space, but we're working on it.
Yeah.
All right. And you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and MeWe. And your pair of shoes, really look at the bottom of your pair of shoes. If it's not
good, there it is.
Yeah, it's Comedy Forecast. Anywhere. And who speaks for you guys this week?
Go ahead,
Greg. I'll speak. Oh, you ready for me to speak?
Speak. It's the thing.
Okay. Hey, you can find Chuck and I over at Technorama, and you can just search for Technorama Podcast anywhere. Then we go by that moniker on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, you name it. We're there. Just look for Technorama Podcast in the Googles, and you'll find us.
All right, very good. But now it's time to hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, Don't put on the red shirt.
Yabba dabba doo.
No. Crap.
Cross your fingers, everyone. Let's hope it works. Engage.